Hello once again, and welcome to another story-filled episode of Musings on Golf. I'm Kelly Elbin, along with my co-host, Bob Bupka. Robert, as the calendar turns to September, we're excited to welcome in Johnson Wagner. Oh, man. His unique interactive video work on Golf Channel and Peacock has really caught on with viewers. We'll also take a look back at the Tour Championship. We'll look ahead to the President's Cup based on the six captains' picks that were made by each captain this week. Bob, I know you know Johnson a little bit. How much fun, how interesting it's been to see his star rise so quickly as a media hit in really such a short period of time.
Yeah, I know Johnson Wagner fairly well. He went to Virginia Tech. My brother Tom's daughter, Jennifer, she went to Virginia Tech. So we have a relationship there. The only way I can put it, Kelly, and I've been thinking about this, the first time that Johnson Wagner goes to the golf course, he shoots an even par round. That's how good he is in front of that camera. Everything comes natural. That smile comes natural. Making people laugh comes natural. He is what we call TV gold. And I think his career is just going to expand and expand and expand because he's a natural at what he does and very proud of the work that he's doing on Golf Channel.
Love that word, natural. And Bob, he won three times on tour. He brings a lot of credibility, not just to the viewer, but to those players who he's walking and talking with. That's a big plus for Golf Channel to have someone who the guys know and they respect.
Yeah, and just everything's happening at the right time. Johnson was getting a little tired of competing. Had no idea the media was in his future. Got exposed to it, fell in love with it. And now I think he's just going to go on to bigger and better things.
Hope you enjoy this terrific interview we did with Johnson Wagner right after these messages from our Musings on Golf partners. Our friends at William & Harry are always looking for ways to stand out in the crowd. So for anyone who belongs to a country club, William & Harry can have your shoes private labeled to fit your specific needs. The same applies to your company or any organization you might be affiliated with. This makes you a clear winner. Why? Well, you have a better quality shoe that feels great, and you have the logo of your club, company, or organization on your shoes that really makes you stand out on the golf course. To learn more, visit williamandharry.com today and be sure to input our promotional code 15OFF, M-O-G, for a 15% discount at williamandharry.com.
You flew the trap on 6. You birdied 12 and 13. You closed out the match 4-3. From your numbers to your windows, everything was dialed. That was yesterday. Outperform your best. Titleist, the number one ball in golf.
Celebrating its 30th year, the South Florida PGA Golf Pass offers the ultimate summer golf experience with special access to more than 100 private, semi-private, and public golf facilities. From May 1st through October 31st, Golf Pass members can enjoy special low rates, exclusive member-only outings, special offers, and more. For just $60, you can purchase the South Florida PGA Golf Pass and instantly gain access to all these great benefits through the member-only app. It's simple. Pay, download, play. Visit sfpgagolf.com/golfpass for more information. That's sfpgagolf.com/golfpass. Bob, our special guest today has won three times on the PGA Tour, but he has really gained the attention of the golfing public through his natural and comfortable ways in explaining and, more importantly, recreating shots at some of golf's biggest events. A proud Hokie from Virginia Tech who starred Golf Channel and Peacock. Man, oh, man, it just continues to ascend. Johnson Wagner, welcome to Musings on Golf. How are you?
Kelly, I'm great. Bob, it's good to see both of y'all. Good to be with y'all. I'm having a dreamlike year. It's hard to believe that I'd be feeling more fulfilled in my media role than I was playing golf, but it's just been sort of a dream come true and a whirlwind type year for me.
Hey, thanks for joining us, Johnson. And you know, when people ask me to describe Johnson Wagner and what's different about Johnson Wagner, and I say he has an internal smile. What that means is when people watch you work, you naturally make them smile. And boy, oh boy, there's no better gift than you can give the viewers than the opportunity to allow them to smile at your stuff. You ask great questions. The players have great respect for you. Just congratulations on how fast you're escalating in that media world. I can't escalate that fast in the golf world, but you're certainly escalating that fast in the media world.
Thank you, Bob. I've always found it easier to be nice and have a good time as opposed to be rude and be miserable. It takes a lot less effort to have fun, I think.
You do it very well, and I guess needless to say, you're certainly enjoying what you're doing in your new role.
I'm having an absolute blast, and I feel so fortunate with Golf Channel. I've got so many different roles. I can sit at the studio desk in a jacket and tie. I can call golf on the broadcast side, either as an analyst, a hole announcer, or a walking commentator. And then the stuff I've been able to do on live from as far as walk and talks and recreations. I just feel like every week I work, it's something different and it keeps it very fresh. And I am having an absolute blast. I hope it continues. A lot of people have told me, they're like, just wait, give this guy a couple of years. He's going to be miserable like the rest of us. But I don't think that's going to happen. I love what I'm doing, and staying connected to a game I love in some capacity at the highest level has just been, it's been really nice, because at the end of my playing career, I was very concerned about what I was going to do next once my golf game left me, and I feel very grateful to have a new passion in the game of golf.
Our very special guest on Musings on Golf is none other than Johnson Wagner. Who came up with the idea to even try you out in this capacity?
As far as on the golf course doing walking talks and recreations?
Yes.
So my studio boss, he's been with Golf Channel for a long time. His name is Matt Hegarty. And when I first got the tryouts up there at Golf Channel in Stamford, Connecticut, I told him how much I loved the Live From show, and that I wanted, that was my goal on the studio side, was to be on the Live From show, because when I played or even in college watching Live From at night, Frank Nobolo doing stuff on the golf course, I said, that's the kind of stuff I want to do. And they gave me a trial on Live From Tuesday, Wednesday at LACC at the US Open last year. I just did a handful of walk and talks, a couple course segments, and I think it went really well. And this off season, had a conversation with Matt Hegarty and another producer named Alan Robison. And we decided we were going to kind of step it up at the Players Championship and do some features on the course live, all that stuff. Frank Nobolo and I think Trevor Immelman ended up doing at majors. They would tape 2 weeks before, and the idea to do things live on the course, they gave me a shot at it. And the recreations, I have to give Matt Hegarty full credit for wanting to do those after play Thursday through Sunday at the Players Championship, and for the PGA Tour and the rules staff to allow me to go out there and do that. And as far as like picking the shots or what I'm going to do, it's kind of a team effort between me, my field producer, Andrew Bradley, who's incredible, been at the Golf Channel forever, and then the Live From producer, his name's Jeff Fabian. So it's kind of the three of us get together while we're watching major championship golf and sort of weed it down as the day goes on to what we're going to go out and do.
Johnson Wagner, our special guest, share with us the story about you getting caught in the dark with none other than the U.S. Open champion, Bryson DeChambeau.
Man, that, you know, I had had such good momentum at the Players, and the PGA was doing so much great stuff. And Pinehurst was an incredible week for me. I had never felt anything like it before. I'm driving around the golf course during the day, and all the spectators are stopping me. I'm taking pictures. It was crazy. And for it to end the way it did with Bryson Sunday was like something that you couldn't have scripted. And so the golf tournament ends, and I'm like, well, I'm going to go out there. Can I hit both shots, the shot from under the tree and the bunker shot? And they said, yes, absolutely. So we get out there, and I watched the trophy presentation from underneath that magnolia tree. I watched Bryson go into the media center, come back out. There's 1,000 people on that green, and I'm starting to think like, okay, this may not happen tonight. I may get bumped from the show. Couldn't get the green clear. So I just embraced it, walked up to the green, congratulated Bryson. We were all just kind of hanging out. And I go back to kind of get in position, and they say Bryson's agreed to come to the set. And at this point, it's dark outside. And I'm talking to my producer, and they're like, I don't know if we're going to have time. We're going to just skip the first shot from under the tree. The Jumbotron to the right of the fairway was illuminating that bunker he was in. And so he said, why don't you go get in position? If we have time, we'll come to you right after he comes off the set. And so I go down, I'm getting ready in the bunker. And apparently when they went to commercial, Bryson was on the set with Rich and Brandel and Paul McGinley. And I think Paige McKenzie was there too. I guess during commercial break, Rich Lerner said, hey, Bryson, he's getting ready to leave. They said, hey, Johnson's getting ready to go hit your bunker shot on 18. You should go down there and give him a lesson. I had no idea. So I get in there. I clean the first ball just a little bit, and it one hops into some bushes. Ball was never found again. It was dark, but never found again. And as I'm coming up out of the bunker, I was going to walk up to the green and talk about the Rory putt that he missed, the short putt on 18. And as I'm coming out of the bunker, this cart pulls up and Bryson jumps out with the trophy. And it was just, it was ridiculous and how gracious he was with his time. And we chatted for a second and he's like, hit it again. Just make sure if you do anything, make sure you catch it heavy. And so I caught it heavy and I thought I left it way short of the green, but it landed perfect, chased up there. And it was, you know, I kind of blacked out. I remember grabbing the trophy and holding the trophy, and it was an incredible moment for me. And I think it just showed showed the difference in how Bryson has started embracing the media and what it can do for his brand to sort of put himself out there and be a more personable guy. And I just, at the Open Championship the next month, I did a walk and talk with him down the entire first hole, and he was so gracious and funny. And I think he's changed a lot of people's opinion of him, and certainly has changed mine.
Well, you hold a record now, the shortest elapsed time when any player has ever gotten a lesson from a reigning U.S. Open champion, a matter of minutes, and Johnson Wagner right there finding out how to hit that bunker shot. Just one quick word about Rory, because there's always two sides to the story, Johnson, and you know from being out there, winning is absolutely the best thing that can happen. But on the flip side, when anybody wins, somebody has to lose. That was a heartbreaker for Rory McIlroy.
It was, and it was the 13th hole. They had it up and drivable on Sunday, and he one-hopped it off the grandstand, hit a beautiful pitch down there and made birdie, and I thought it was over. It was his tournament to win. Got a great break off of 14 tee, made a nice up and down, and you know, the shot he hit into 15, airmailing that green, he made an unbelievable bogey on 15. And then to miss those two short putts on 16 and 18 were just, it was tragic. It was, and I think a lot of people forget the up and down he made from a left bunker to a tight pin on 17. It's just, it seemed like once he got that two shot lead on 13, he just couldn't quite handle it. But Rory is resilient. I know he didn't play great the rest of the year after that US Open, but I fully expect him to come back next season. And you know, I think it was at LACC. He said he'd take 100 more losses like that to get one more major. And well, I mean, I think he's going to come back strong. I don't know that he's going to win the Masters, but I think he wins a major next year.
Wow. Coming right from Johnson Wagner. How much left do you have in this season?
I'm going to call 4 tournaments in the fall, 3 of them in the analyst role. 1 is a Walker at Sea Island. And then I'm also doing the President's Cup for live from in a couple weeks, which I'm very excited about. I don't quite know what my role is going to be. I think I'm going to do some on-course stuff early in the week. I've been trying to talk to Captain Furyk about getting in that team room and just showing a different side of U.S. team golf. I know Zach Johnson had kind of shut that down in Rome, and Luke Donald welcomed the media in that one time for a little walk through the locker room, team room. So I'm hoping that I can do something like that. I just think fans want to see sort of an inside look at what, not what goes on in a team room, but what it looks like in there. I mean, I know I personally have never seen the inside of a team room at a Ryder Cup or President's Cup. So I think that would be something I would want to see. And that's the way I kind of go about my pieces in questions. If it's something I want to see, I feel like the viewer at home would want to see it too, because I'm such a fan of the game.
Having a boatload of fun visiting with Johnson Wagner of Golf Channel here on Musings on Golf. When I introduced you, I used the word comfortable, and I think that viewers certainly feel that way because you make them feel that way. I'm wondering about the first time, though, where you were before a camera on Golf Channel, the very first time. I cannot imagine, Johnson, that was the most comfortable. As a matter of fact, that was brand new. What was that like?
It was nerve-wracking that whole day. I went up for my first week was the Houston Open in 2022. No, excuse me. Yes, 2022 in October. And I had never done any studio work like that before. The set is actually the same set that Sunday Night Football in America uses. I was working with Cara Banks, who's absolutely fantastic, but we didn't have a pregame show, so it was the night show. Felt comfortable with all my prep that I'd done, and I had watched the golf. I knew what I was going to say. I'd never done a highlight before, and Cara was supposed to come out on the set about 15 minutes early. We were going to practice some highlights. I guess she had some wardrobe malfunction and came out about 45 seconds before going on air. And so I was already nervous and amped up, and she showed up and just such a pro, ready to rock and roll. She had done it 1,000 times, and that red light came on and I just froze. The studio is about 62 degrees and I was pouring sweat, and got through that first show. And finally, later in that week before a Saturday pregame, one of the producers, Harris Chang, came up to me and he said, "Hey man," he said, "you know your stuff. We want you to act like you're sitting in a bar talking golf with a buddy." And from that moment forward, I've felt so relaxed and comfortable that I'm just having a high level golf conversation. I'm not reading off of a teleprompter. I just have to talk about golf and what I've seen. And so I've become very comfortable pretty quickly with a lot of help from some great people up there at Golf Channel.
Getting that perspective from someone at Golf Channel had to be, it meant the world, didn't it? It really, just as you said, what a relaxing, not totally different approach, right?
It was totally different to the point where, you know, I'm messing around with Cara on Saturday, Sunday. We're just laughing, having fun right before the show, during commercials. And, you know, I don't want to get into what I said to her during a commercial, but it just was the bar environment of me being relaxed and having fun, minus obviously any alcohol. But it was a real wake up call for me. And I feel like I've tried to carry that in everything I've done from then on.
Virginia Tech. You met your future wife there. You've earned a spot in the Virginia Tech Sports Hall of Fame. Congratulations. I mean, what an honor. Why'd you choose Virginia Tech, and what stands out from your years there in Blacksburg?
I wasn't very highly recruited, went to high school in the New York area, didn't do a whole lot in junior golf. And I was playing the Scott Robertson Memorial tournament down in Roanoke, Virginia. It was a pretty big junior event at the time. And my coach, Jay Hardwick, he likes to say that he was recruiting another player in my group on the final round. And I went out and shot 69 and played really well. I think I was bogey free. And after the round, he came up to me after I signed my card and said, "I'd like to offer you a spot on the team at Virginia Tech." Up until that point, it was University of Richmond was the only other school that wanted me that was Division I.
And my alma mater, by the way, Johnson, I understand.
The Spiders?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, a great school. And they had a good team. I mean, they had a bunch of guys from the New York area down there, Jesse Fitzgerald, Joe Horwitz. And I would have loved to have gone there. But when the offer came to play at a bigger school like Virginia Tech, I jumped on it. We were pretty terrible my first year. And then Brendan DeYoung came in, who's a President's Cup international team guy from Zimbabwe, played the tour for 15 years. He came in my sophomore year, and we just – clicked and started winning golf tournaments. Won, I think, twice my sophomore year, a bunch my junior and senior year, finished eighth in NCAA's junior year, 16th senior year, something like that. That was before it was match play. And just the camaraderie that our team had was unbelievable. We were like our own little fraternity, and we hung out, we lived together, we did everything together. And I hear a bunch of players talk about their college team in different ways, and I can't imagine having a better experience than I did in Blacksburg.
Yeah, and your future wife, she's a really good soccer player, right?
She was. She played. She only played her freshman and sophomore year. It just became too much for her academically and being an athlete as well. So she didn't play junior senior year. But we love Virginia Tech. We've instilled that love with our kids, and we try to get up there a couple times a year, non football weekends, and just go to a soccer game, go to a tennis match, and just try to soak in a lot of other sports at Virginia Tech. And our kids love it, and maybe they'll end up there one day.
Now, before I kick it back to Bob, 2008 Shell Houston Open, your first win on the PGA Tour. Wondering, what was that like for you? First of all, trying to get that first win, you holding off some really good players, as it turned out, with Chad Campbell, Jeff Ogilvie, who just won the U.S. Open 2 years earlier. What was that like for you emotionally, just trying to get to the finish line?
It was intense. I'd been in the final group with Bubba Watson the year before. Adam Scott was in the group ahead of us in Houston and ended up winning. Watched him make the putt on the final round. I didn't have a very good season leading into that week in 2008, but I knew once I got there, it's just one of those places. Form never mattered for me when I got to that golf course. I just seemed to play it well all the time. So I opened with a 63 and just never looked back, was wire to wire. The Masters was the very next week, and I was not exempt into the Masters. And my wife and I were traveling in a motorhome at that time. And so we would travel with our dog. She came in Saturday night, took the dog for a walk, and came in, and I had Masters highlights on and thought nothing of it. I'm just like, yeah, it's Saturday before the Masters. There's Masters highlights on. I'm going to watch them. And she walked in and she said, "What do you think you're doing? Turn that TV off. You're not watching Masters highlights right now." And I was like, "Oh gosh, I wasn't even thinking that way." But it was incredible. I walked off the 18th green and my agent was there and Jimmy Johnson. And I was like, "Oh, this is serious. He's here. I've just won this golf tournament." And before I went in to sign my card, he walked with me, put his arm around me, and he said, "Hey, once you're done with all your media obligations," he said, "I've got a private plane. I've got a driver for your bus, and we're headed to Augusta as soon as you're ready." And it was, an hour later, my wife, my caddy, my agent, and I were on a plane headed for Augusta. And I don't think I slept 2 hours that night, woke up at 7 a.m. the next morning, just chomping at the bit to go play a practice round. It was a high I've never felt before in anything. I think the rest of my career, I was always trying to capture that and figure out, how to feel that way again. It was unbelievable.
A quick search of the records indicate that Johnson Wagner is the only player in Augusta history that had his camper driven to the site while he flew in a private plane. What a thrill it had to be on that first tee at Augusta National.
It was unlike anything. Thursday I didn't feel the nerves quite so much, and then Friday morning for some reason on that first tee I was just overcome with nerves. And I hit the ball so far right off of that tee. It was by the old press building, Bob. It was so far right. And I looked at my caddy. I'm like, "Do I need to hit a provisional?" And so I hit another ball. And as I'm walking off the tee, one of the marshals there with the yellow hard hat on said, "I've been working this tee for 30 years. I've never seen anybody hit a provisional ball off the first hole at Augusta National." So I got another record. I'm the only guy to hit a provisional there. So.
But you tied for 36th. I mean, you played well.
I did. I made triple bogey on one. I found my ball, but made triple and played great after that to make the cut. And then the weekend, my whole goal was to make an eagle somewhere so I could get some of that Augusta crystal to bring home. And it didn't happen. I made a few mistakes going at some par fives and two, but I had a blast. It was an unreal week.
Well, I got to scold you on one thing. I did not like that reference to the old press building, because I was there before that building was there.
Well, I was there for the first time this year in the media capacity, and the new press building is unbelievable. I want to pitch a tent and just move in out there. Yeah. That is some place.
Talk a little bit, please, about and I don't mean to be cold about it, but I guess the end of your playing career, as you acknowledged, and then that transition to broadcasting, was that difficult? Knowing that your tour days were coming to an end.
It was difficult. I struggled for about a year and a half. I had played out of 126 to 50 for a couple of years in a row category on the PGA Tour and was only getting 15 or so starts. And then my last full year playing, wasn't a full year, but it was 2022. I was playing out of past champion status. I think I only made 7 starts, and not being able to tee it up regularly, not being able to get in any rhythm, not working as hard off the golf course as I knew I needed to, because my body just couldn't handle it. My knees, my wrists, everything started hurting. And I struggled with the thought, because everything I had ever done from college on was to play professional golf. And so it was sort of this, what's going to be next for me, to the point where I was going to start a company where I had some friends that have clients. I would try to go entertain clients on the golf course. What was that? I had to do something with golf because I have no other skills. And I was really lost for a while. And a buddy of mine who I played high school golf against, has been a researcher at Golf Channel for 15 years. And he called me right after we hosted the President's Cup at Quail Hollow, my home club here in Charlotte. He called me, I was on the course, and he said, "Hey, there's some producers that are throwing your name around to come up for a trial week. Would you have any interest?" And I said, "Absolutely." And from that day forward, I felt like I had this new sort of invigoration. I wake up in the morning and I'm thinking about what I'm going to do. When we get off the phone, I got to start watching President's Cup footage from years past. So I can, yeah. I mean, I'm probably gonna be sitting at a desk with Brandel Chamblee for a few days. I better come in prepared. So I feel like I have something to wake up and prepare for. And when I had my next tournament was 2 months away, I just felt like, what's the point in preparing now? I can do nothing, go watch kids' sports. And I feel like now I'm working towards something, and it feels really good to be on the right path again.
I got to mention one thing, Johnson, well, my brother would kill me. His daughter went to Virginia Tech. So we have a little more in common than you had alluded to, making fun of me with that old press building. But Johnson Wagner, you have been so good at what you do, and I only see you getting better. I mean, it's amazing to me how the general public has reacted. I mean, you say something rather mundane and you get a standing ovation. I say something that's absolutely genius and I get no response. So you got the secret, my friend. Just keep it up. What are your thoughts on the President's Cup? What do you like from both sides? And what will the keys to victory be when we get to Royal Montreal?
Well, and I am a proud American, but for the health of the President's Cup, I'm rooting for the international team this year. They need to win because, I mean, let's face it, it's been sort of a rout the last 20 years. I mean, the international team's only won one time. And when Captain Weir made his picks, I really wanted to see 4 Canadians on that team. And I know Nick Taylor did not have a great second half of this year, but you had Nick Taylor do something that no Canadian has done in 69 years and winning the Canadian Open last year. It is one of the greatest moments I've ever witnessed. The crowd that was around that 18th green, 17th green, when they went out for that, not 17, but when they went out for that playoff, he and Tommy Fleetwood, the vibe, the atmosphere, that's what needs to happen in Montreal for the Canadians to win. For the internationals to win, they need the Canadian crowd to show up like they did. And I think I'm happy Mackenzie Hughes is on that team. Great short game, great putter. But I just feel like not having Nick Taylor is a lost opportunity to really galvanize that crowd behind your team. Royal Montreal, I played the 2014 Canadian Open there. It's a classic style, you know, US Open type major championship venue. It's got tight fairways. Going to have thick rough. So I think players need to drive the ball well, which is why I'm a little surprised. And I guess I'm making the same argument here for Max Homa against, I don't know how you could take Max Homa on that team. He's driving it horribly. He's played terrible since that top four finish at the Masters. He's only had one top 10. I thought that was sort of a wasted opportunity putting him in there. But I guess I'm kind of speaking out of both sides of my mouth, wanting Nick Taylor and not wanting Max Homa. But those are the two picks that sort of surprised me. Other than that, it was pretty standard. I think we all want a close match. I mean, Quail, we can say it was kind of close. The Ryder Cup, I don't feel like has been close for years. I think home field advantage has played such a role. So I'm hoping we can get an intriguing President's Cup match headed into Sunday.
And we're coming down the stretch with Johnson Wagner. Hey, just following up on that, so there have been 14 President's Cup played. U.S. has won 12. International teams won one. There's been a very famous tie. Why? Why has, in your opinion, why has the U.S. been so dominant? Because the international team, even this year, had a lot of really good players on it. The guys who were playing really well. Why?
Well, I think it took a while too for the Ryder Cup when they went from GB&I to added continental Europe. I think it took them a while to sort of have that cohesive team. And when you look at the international team, I mean, you've got guys from South Korea, not this year, but South America, South Africa, Australia, they're from all over. They're not playing for one specific thing other than that time of year. And I think when Ernie Els, I think he had that logo created maybe 8 years ago so that they could play under the banner of one flag. And I think the captains like Trevor Immelman, I think Trevor, it was heartbreaking to see what happened to them at Quail, because you had the heart and soul of their team just ripped out right before with Liv and those guys not being able to play. I mean, Cam Smith's on that team at Quail Hollow, things are a little bit different. Louis Oosthuizen on that team, things are a little bit different. Yeah. I think now we're seeing them play for that flag, and I think they're having more dinners, they're having more, they're bringing that crew and core together more often than they did before. So I think we're going to start seeing more competitive matches going forward, and these international teams more cohesive.
Okay, two questions left from me, one that I ask every week, but also one particular to you, and I got to put you on the spot, the mustache. Is that part of the Johnson Wagner brand, if you will? How long have you had that stash? It seems like it's gotten bigger and more noticeable over time.
The first time I grew it was Thanksgiving 2011. I didn't shave. We were with my wife's family. I didn't shave for a couple of weeks, and we got home from Thanksgiving, and just to try to piss her off, I shaved everything off but the mustache, and it got such a rise out of her that I had to keep it. And I kept it all through December. I get to January and I go play great at Kapalua, finished ninth. And then I won the Sony Open and the very next week. And so I was like, okay, this thing's going to stay for a while. I've shaved it a bunch of times off and on since then. If I was playing bad and had it, I'd shave it. If I was playing bad and didn't have it, I'd try to grow it. You know, golfers are so, we're just a little bit kooky. And so superstitious, that's the word I was looking for.
There you go.
But then right after I got that call from my buddy Kevin Ryan to go do a trial week, I had about a month and a half until I was going up. And Katie, my wife, said, well, if you're going to start doing TV, you've got to grow your mustache back. And so I grew it back and I haven't cut it since. I'm afraid Golf Channel would fire me if I cut it off because it's kind of become my brand. But post President's Cup, I'm doing 4 events and I will have 0 on camera. So I am thinking about after the President's Cup, shaving off.
Oh no.
Giving my wife about a month of clean shaven Johnson, and then I'll grow it back for January. But I get a lot of comments about it. I get called Ted Lasso a lot, but what I'm very proud of, and I've never done it, and I'm going to do it this year for Halloween. So I guess I can't shave it off. I'm going to be Freddie Mercury from Queen for Halloween this year. Like the Live Aid Freddie Mercury, tight white denim jeans, a tank top. I'm going to get a studded armband, and I'm going to walk around and just sing Queen songs all night. And I think it'd be like a fat, overweight, middle-aged Freddie Mercury if he was still alive today.
Who are the champion, Johnson Wagner? That's fantastic. Okay, final question for me, and it's one that I've asked, and we've really had a wide array of responses, and it's been really cool. And again, very simply, who would round out a dream foursome for you, whether they're living or deceased, the three other players you'd play that sort of magical round, and where would you play it?
I like the where would you play it? Gosh, my brother and I both have boys that are really good at golf, and so we play a lot of golf together. And that is like I'm living a dream foursome with those guys. Anytime I can tee it up, but I've only played one round with Tiger Woods. He's in there. Freddie Couples was my hero growing up, and I got to play about five competitive rounds with him. But I love Freddie. Definitely playing with Freddie, Tiger, and my current favorite is Jordan Spieth. I've only played one round with him. Love Jordan. That's my foursome. And I want to play Lynx golf. St. Andrews is special, but I just had a trip over for the Open this year and went and played Royal Dornick for 4 days with my son. So I'm going to take that foursome, Tiger, Freddie, and Jordan Spieth, and we're going to go play Royal Dornick over in Northern Scotland.
All right. Before we say goodbye, I just got a text saying, Bob, you want to really get ahead in the media world, you have to grow a mustache like Johnson Wagner. I sent one back. Hey, I'm on radio. I don't think a mustache gonna do me any good. Johnson, you have been a delight. You are a delight. Congratulations on your newfound fame, and just keep bringing entertainment to golf fans like you're doing. You're a very special guy.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you, Kelly. Absolute pleasure being with you guys today.
Just like you, I want to look good and perform at my best on the golf course. And that's exactly why I wear the new WH golf shoes from William & Harry, and you should too. Folks, I love these golf shoes. They're made of deer skin and calf skin. They've got a soft gel insert, and the reinforced hardened soft spikes increase stability and balance. And I got to tell you, they are so incredibly comfortable. So head on over to williamandharry.com to check out the new WH golf shoe. Look your best, play your best with William & Harry. Bob, how entertaining was that interview with Johnson? I learned a lot about him, his views on the game. I was struck by how candid he was about the captain's picks earlier this week for the President's Cup. He's become, and rightfully so, a big voice in the game of golf.
Yeah, he really has, and he does it with a smile, very well hidden behind that big mustache that he wears. But trust me, there is a smile there, and it's infectious, and certainly proud to have Johnson Wagner and now part of the media.
You called it in regards to Scheffler winning the tour championship, and he was given a two-shot advantage over Xander and as many as 10 over the rest of the field. And while he may not have had the low 72 hole score, he was the big winner. He was the big winner financially, first player to win seven times on the PGA Tour since Tiger. And essentially, Bob, he wrapped up, in my opinion, he wrapped up the Player of the Year award. Kind of funny, isn't it? You have a guy in Xander Schauffele who wins two major championships, but in all likelihood is not going to be named the Player of the Year. Scheffler, he's just been too good. Oh, and by the way, the seven wins, it doesn't even include winning the gold medal at the Olympics. What a phenomenal year.
I guarantee you, in a dream, Scotty may have had 6 months ago. He wouldn't allow himself to dream the lofty goals that he achieved. And he still does it with class. Mm. He does it with dignity. He's great for the fans. He's great for golf. We're certainly proud to have Scotty Scheffler as our FedEx Cup champion.
It was neat to see him hugging Randy Smith, his longtime coach and mentor. Randy, previously a guest on Musings on Golf. And yeah, that inner circle with Randy and his family, seeing the little baby, it was really neat. Let's see what Scotty had to say about winning the tour championship, winning the FedEx Cup, and really winning it all in 2024.
It's been a great year. I'm proud of the results. It's something I try not to focus too much on, but at the end of the day, being able to win tournaments is a great feeling. And, you know, it's what we're worked towards, and to be able to have as many wins as I have this year is really special. I made some putts this year when I really needed to. And, you know, last year I was playing good golf and I wasn't able to make the key putts at the right time. And, you know, this year I was. And so that's really just the difference. My goal to start the week was just to have the right attitude and use what I feel like is my best strength. And that's my mind. And, you know, that's what Teddy reminded me of at the beginning of the week. And that was really just the thing that I focused on the most, was just staying in it mentally. And it paid off.
Yeah, Bob, the mind, right? I mean, he really strikes me, Scheffler, as pretty unflappable. I rarely see him get down. He doesn't get too high either. I would like to see him show, I don't know, maybe a little bit more emotion at times, but that's who he is who he is. Very well grounded and mind over the rest of the field. It certainly seems like what an approach he has and what a game he has.
Yeah, you bring up an excellent point there, Kelly. I think one of the cornerstones to his Scotty's success is he didn't allow himself to get too excited with good play. And conversely, he didn't allow himself to get too upset if he makes a mistake. He knows he's good enough to recover from any mistake. I mean, he's just the ideal tour professional. And I think the PGA Tour is mighty proud to have Scotty Scheffler as their FedEx Cup champion.
Oh, you're spot on that. Hey, let's talk for a minute or two about the six captains picks by both Jim Furyk on the U.S. side and Mike Weir on the international side ahead of the President's Cup. As we heard from Johnson Wagner, I agree with him. I thought the omission of Nick Taylor, him not being included, you know, Weir, who's Canadian, did pick three Canadians and all of them worthy, Corey Connors and Taylor Pendrith and Mackenzie Hughes. But I was very surprised Nick Taylor was left off of that team. On the U.S. side, I also agree with him wholeheartedly. I don't know where the pick of Max Homa came from. He's not in good form. I would say Justin Thomas, who we all questioned big time last year, why was he included in the Ryder Cup as a captain's pick? This year, he didn't make it, and he's been in good form. He's playing better. To five top five finishes this year. I was surprised by that. We did good news for him. He and his wife Jillian are expecting their first child at the end of November, so that's good news for Justin Thomas. But that surprised me, both with Nick Taylor, Bob, and with Justin Thomas.
Well, you never know what goes through a captain's mind. He gets to speak to every player. He gets the feedback of his teammates. And, you know, maybe a majority came up and said, hey, we need Max Homa on this team. He's not playing well right now, but he's tough and he can help the team. And if he gets that feedback as a captain, Jim Furyk, in due diligence, has to pick Max Homa. And I don't know for a fact, but I would pretty well predict that was the case.
One guy who got on the team and now he has to sacrifice a role, but I'm sure he's happy to do it. Keegan Bradley, talk about earning your way onto the President's Cup team. He's now no longer a vice captain for the President's Cup team, but I think he's much happier playing. What a preparation this is. What excitement for him ahead of his captaincy for the 2025 U.S. Ryder Cup team. Bob, I guess that begins sort of the conversation is Keegan Bradley is one of the big goals for him next year to be a playing participant on the 2025 Ryder Cup team, playing captain. And that happened. I tell you what, Bob, if he keeps playing the way he has been, talk's going to continue.
No, you bring up a good point there, Kelly. Whether he gets on as a player, he fulfilled a lifelong dream by being a captain. He's a real good guy. Pat Bradley is his aunt. She's a Hall of Famer. She's a real good person in her own right. Very happy for the Keegan Bradley family.
As we close, I noted that maybe the PGA Tour and LIV saga is, I don't know, Bob, maybe softening a bit. We've got this made-for-TV event that's going to take place in December. Rory McIlroy and Scotty Scheffler against Bryson DeChambeau and Brooks Koepka. I guess the one of the positives on that is also that we get to see the four of them playing on the same golf course competitively before we have to wait for the 2025 Masters. I did see the LIV schedule was announced, at least their first four events for 2025, and all four go up against signature events on the PGA Tour. So LIV marches forward. This is a nice event, but I just don't see any deal coming anytime soon between LIV and the PGA Tour. I'm happy for this event, but I think a split in golf continues for quite some time.
I think you're right on the money there, Kelly. Anybody that loves golf would love to see the two organizations come together, and we can only hope and pray.
Hey, Bob, thanks so much to Johnson Wagner. He was absolutely terrific. Next week, we'll have a nice preview of the Solheim Cup that will be played at Robert Trent Jones Golf Club in the Washington, D.C. area. Bob, it's been a lot of fun. The golf season, officially the 2024 PGA Tour season, may be completed, but Musings on Golf rolls on. Good being with you again, buddy. And thanks to all of the listeners for being with us on Musings on Golf.